This episode of Lord Johnlander includes conversation about sexual violence that some listeners may find distressing. Support resources are available from RAIN.org, including a confidential helpline for those in the U.S. That's RAINN.org.
Welcome to Lord Johnlander, the Outlander podcast for Lord John fans, where we talk about all things Outlander, but especially about Jaime and his Sassenach.
And sometimes we talk about Claire, too.
For however long it takes, we'll lead you on a journey so chaotic, you'll question every life choice that led you to be here today. And like the Hotel California, you can check out anytime, but you can never leave.
We may not be the Outlander podcast you wanted, but we will be the Outlander podcast you didn't know you needed.
Now, before we get into it, this is your one and only warning that show and book spoilers are lurking around every corner. We're going to spoil stuff from future seasons, future books, and our own brains.
Remember, if you can't prove our headcanon didn't happen, then we can only assume that it did.
If you make it through the episode in one piece, we'd love to hear from you. Send us your burning questions, wild theories, thick prompts, flattering compliments, or whatever's on your mind. You can contact us on Twitter and Tumblr at Lord Johnlander or on our website at lordjohnlander.wordpress.com, where you'll also find our archived episodes, teasers, thick recs, and more.
Hello, welcome to Lord Johnlander. We are your hosts. I'm Mistress Pandora. You can call me Pan because that's still a mouthful.
And I'm Beth.
So we're on episode 2.03, which is useful occupations and deceptions. We kind of mentioned doing like clarifications last week about the connection to Eaton. Did John have a connection to Eaton? And we did a quick little search like just now and couldn't find anything super readily. So that may have to wait until season 5. So you'll forget about it and so will we. And that's okay.
And it's possible I might have had something too, but I haven't had a chance to listen to the full recording yet from last week. So if you know what, maybe I'll clarify it next episode. Maybe I won't.
Who knows? So we like to keep you on your toes. This is what we do. So I just mentioned this to Beth before we hit record, but watching my initial impression of this episode was it was so boring. I'm just gonna own it.
Well, it was so funny because last week, I don't think it was on the episode. I think it was when we were just chatting like before the episode or in the group chat or whatever. I think like you and Ness were both saying like the first half of season 2 is boring. And I'm thinking, I don't know. I mean, you know, it's got like the great Jaime hair. It's got like some spying shit and like whatever. And it's got Versailles. I don't know if I can trust myself anymore.
Also, so much didn't happen.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah. I would like to give a shout out real quick to Levy Squeaks, who was intending to join us as our guest host this week, but was not able to swing it due to a scheduling conflict. So when we get introduced to Fergus towards the end of the episode, his absence will be sorely missed. So just wanted to say, love you, Levy. We miss you. And we'll get to do this some other time, and it's going to be even worse chaos than it normally is.
It's going to be even worse.
It's going to be worse in a good way. In a good way.
I know. I was really looking forward to having, you know, somebody else to beef this episode up a little. But, you know, we'll make do.
We'll make do. So we've got some, a whole bunch of not much happens. Like, even the synopsis from Wiki is boring. Political machinations dominate most of Jamie's time. While Claire puts her healing skills to use, their plan to stop Culloden moves along, but the forward momentum is jeopardized by past actions. Okay. That's accurate.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of just... Yeah, it doesn't move forward. It does... It's kind of weird because by the end, they have made some progress, but like... It doesn't feel like they've made any progress. But I do think it pays off in some of the next episodes as they start to, like, you know, figure shit out a little more. Or maybe it doesn't, because, well, I don't know. I guess we'll have to see. I always, the Paris episodes all blend together for me. And I just, like, never, it's weird for me actually to be watching and talking about them separately, because I just, I can never, like, I could never tell you off the top of my head, like, which episode in season two did Fergus first appear, right? And, but now I can, because it's this episode.
Well, yeah, we had to look it up. So, other than Snoozefest, what were your thoughts?
So, big thing is we've got the return of Laird Dumbass. Okay. Oh, God. He's a bit more subdued, and he's kind of even annoyed with himself. Like, he knows he's got to, like, play the role of Laird Dumbass, but also, like, even though he's kind of, like, playing that role to do the spying stuff, he kind of also falls into that role. You know, once he puts the suit on, it fits. Yeah, so it definitely, you know, a more weathered, worn Laird Dumbass, but he's there. You know, and just kind of like that first scene where he comes, like, rushing in from the carriage and, like, you know, oh, I stuck my head out the window to try to get rid of the smoke smell. Like, oh my God. Of course, though, it made me think, like, some things never change over time, right? yeah, but anyway, yeah, so Laird Dumbass is back, but it's kind of like, okay, we've done this before.
You're right, though. He does really fall into this role of being a spy. It's like he's incapable of half-assing anything, which, okay, props. Yeah. But that applies to so much. It applies to being Laird Dumbass. It applies to, well, when he feels like being a raging dick, it applies to that too. And we didn't really get a whole lot of that this episode.
He's kind of a dick.
Yeah, well, he was a little bit of a dick.
Yeah. I mean, he's like, first of all, he's going on and on, like, oh, I've got to go back and play chess, and then I've got to go hang out at the brothel again, and then I got to do, and I'm like, oh, okay, like, okay, I get you're tired and don't really like the spy shit, but, like, your pregnant wife has to go sit with these women. Just have tea, so can you, like, calm down? And then, I'm skipping ahead a little, but, like, when Claire comes home, when he comes home and Claire's not there, and then she comes in later and she's like, I'm here to help you. And he's like, so I believed. Like, holy shit, Jamie, calm down. he gets an Oscar for that. And I don't mean Sam, I mean Jamie. Like, we get it. You were lonely. Okay. Like, you're going to make her make you a sandwich too? Like, come on. But that's Laird Dumbass, right? Like, that is just 100% yeah. Laird Dumbass. So
it's definitely an immature version of Jamie that is almost weird to see after season 4, 5, and 6.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, which, by the way, there was a picture posted on Twitter. I don't think I downloaded it. I should have. Of them, like, filming something in season 7. I don't know where it came from. But, ooh. Oh, no. I'm sorry. It was the video that Sam posted on the set or something. I can't remember what it was. There were a couple things. But anyway, they got Jamie looking pretty old for season 7. I was like, damn.
He's been through it.
He has. He has, that guy, you know?
Woo. What is that Indiana Jones quote? It's not the age, it's the miles. I like that quote. That's a good quote. Anywho, yeah, Laird Dumbass. We also now have the Frank paradox.
Yes. It's just one of those things that, like, drives me nuts, right? So if you don't know what I'm talking about, the Frank paradox is the fact that, you know, Claire remembers that Mary Hawkins was listed as her and Jack Randall were listed as the parents of Frank's ancestor. So all of a sudden now, Claire's like, oh shit, if Jack Randall doesn't live for like another year, then Frank will never exist. And that becomes the reason for like a lot of fucking shenanigans that I won't get into because it's in later episodes of the season.
We have to have something to talk about when we get there.
Yeah, but like all of a sudden, this like spiraling panic that she has about this is this is that's what's going to set off a horrible chain of events.
It's so stupid because she knew that he was his ancestor. She knew that Jack Randall was Frank's ancestor. F immediately she knew. And it was never a concern before. Why now? A whole season later, why now?
Well, and I even put on the things that don't make sense, and I'll just skip to that one right now.
Oh, yeah, you did. Sorry.
She thought he was dead already from the end of from when they left Wentworth up until this point. So it's been like, what, 4, 5, 6 months? And she hasn't thought a thing about what that means for Frank that whole time. And now, but now all of a sudden, she knows Frank, Blackjack Randall's alive. And now all of a sudden, she's worried that if he dies, that Frank won't, like, what? It doesn't make it make sense.
I can't because she gave no shits when she thought he was dead. She gave no, sh she would have killed him herself if she thought she could have.
Exactly. She tried to kill him in the prison, like even before the with the cattle. I mean, she was out for blood with him. She did not give two shits. But now all of a sudden, she's gonna worry about it. And I guess it's because they need this plot catalyst for stuff in future episodes. And that's really kind of annoying.
It is the only thing that I can think might make it make sense, kind of, and even then, seriously, is she didn't know, Claire did not realize until she remembered Mary Hawkins from the Randall Family Bible. She didn't realize that they weren't already married.
Okay, true.
So we can, as far as she knew in season one, he was already married and already had his kids.
True. But there wasn't any, was there any dates on that? I guess there weren't any dates on
No,
that
there weren't
book.
any dates. Or if there were, she didn't remember them. I mean, it's a thin bag. Like it's the recycled Walmart grocery sack that's gonna break and spill your beer all over the parking lot. As far as explanations go, it does not hold water. But that's the only thing I can think of. And even then, she could have drawn, I don't know.
But then why did she say he has to live for another year?
He doesn't need to be around while Mary's pregnant.
But that's what she said specifically.
True.
He needed to live another year.
Yeah.
So again, what the fuck? Like, so did she then? Maybe she did know the date. I mean, I know they didn't show the dates on the book in the show, but like, I don't know.
Well, she knew his death date. She knew the day he was supposed to die. And so if he makes it that long, then presumably everything would work. You know what? We're tearing ourselves up over this way more than anybody involved in the actual production of this. As
If we
happens.
were running the show, things would make a lot more sense because we care,
We
okay?
care about the logic. We do it for you guys. Also, it would be way gayer.
Of course, clearly.
So yeah, Frank paradox, but we also have Lady Dumbass.
Yes. Claire is, and we talked about this last week, how the fact that in the show, Claire and Jamie aren't having sex, kind of makes it seem like all of Claire's shitty mood is because she's just this like sex deprived whatever. So yeah, so the impression that we get is that Claire is sex deprived and bored, which I don't think is doing her character enough service, to be honest.
Mm-mm.
You know, I think sometimes, and this is just a tiny tangent, but, you know, I think sometimes when I complain about stuff with Claire, it's because I want more from Claire or different from Claire than what the show or the author gives us. And this is a perfect example.
Yeah, absolutely. She's unique as far as female leads go. She's uniquely positioned to be able to do more and yet doesn't.
Yeah. But yeah, so first she was mad. So last episode, remember, she was mad that the servants like wouldn't leave her alone. But now she's mad that Suzette took a break and didn't mend her whatever the fuck that was. It's just like some piece of lace. I'm like, is that
serious?
Panties? Is that like, yeah, like, did you really need that just now? So she goes busting in on Suzette and Murta taking a little break for themselves, which they deserve.
Yeah, give Murta something to do.
Well, and she said, don't you have anything better to do? And he's like, no.
Everybody. Okay, it speaks such volumes that everybody in this episode is fucking bored. Like, the characters are bored. That's not a good sign.
I mean, it totally makes sense, though, with the title, because it's almost like ironic, right? Like, useful occupations and deceptions. Yeah. Like, is any of this useful? But, and then Murta, I love, he just absolutely calls her out. Like, when did you become so priggish about a roll in the sheets?
He is clearly the one holding their last brain cell. Like, oh, there is
God.
Three idiots, one brain cell, and they left it with Murta, and he's got nothing else to do but screw the chambermaid. I can't be mad at him for that. He's got to have some sort of, if he can't get mental stimulation for that one brain cell, he might as well get some other stimulation.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and say that I don't even think Murta belongs in the idiots category. He's ready. He's got plans. He's got good ideas. And he's just like flapping in the wind with the two, you know, Laird and Lady Dumbass.
It's their new official titles. Ladies and gentlemen, Laird and Lady Dumbass.
Oh my God.
But I do love that he calls her out on it, and she kind of like, okay, so now it's revealed that she's being bitchy because she's worried about Jack being alive and blah blah blah. She is frustrated.
That just happened like 2 seconds ago.
I know,
never mind. Yeah, no, you're right. Okay.
Well, she's been holding on to it for a whole half an episode, and it's killing her because these episodes span like weeks and weeks. Apparently.
Oh my God. Well, she doesn't have anything better to do than
stew.
Worry about it.
Yell at Suzette, poor Suzette. And then like takes it upon her. And then takes it upon herself to go get birth control for Suzette.
You are really bored, lady. Come on.
Good Lord. But it does let us see Master Raymond and the Comte again. I weirdly like the Comte in this episode. Like, I mean, he was there for all of 5 seconds, but I weirdly, not this episode, this time through, I weirdly like him.
I mean, he's an interesting character.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not, you know, like, and I always say that there's a difference between liking a character and liking a character.
Right.
But yeah, he's definitely an interesting character, and he's really hot, too. So, I mean, he's
oddly
definitely easy on the eyes.
Yeah. It's one of those that kind of surprised me. I'm like, uh-oh, I'm getting ideas. I'm getting urges. I'm probably going to hurt him next. Stick that in my back pocket for another day. not enough of him to talk about in this episode, really. But Master Raymond. Master Raymond's waistcoat, the embroidery. Can we talk about that for a second? How amazing it was?
Yukon, I didn't really notice it, but go
You didn't
ahead.
notice it? Holy crap, it was
I
good.
was falling asleep.
You were fall you slept through the waistcoat. How could you? It had it was just really elaborately embroidered, and I'm staring at it like a machine didn't do that. How did they do that? And how much did it cost? And where can I get one? It was really cool. It had like birds and things, and it had not a tarot card. It had like a Buddhist symbol on it. It was very cool. Anyway, it was phenomenal and striking, and I kind of zoned out because I was just staring at the pretty waistcoat. And so I was, for a moment, I was Tom Bird.
You were like, oh, all the buttons that I have to sew back on.
Was like, the embroidery, it's so pretty.
Yeah, Tom Bird would appreciate that. How's John doing? What do we think John's doing right now? I don't know.
We didn't think too much about this. Oh, actually, I do
Sorry.
have. No, it's cool because I did have a thought and I don't think I wrote it down. Did I write it down? I didn't write it down. You know what? No, pause, pin it, save it for point counterpoint.
Okay.
I'll bring it up at the end of that. Oh, okay. So Claire's face as she rolls up to the hospital and she's looking up like, oh, the pestilence. She was so excited. Bless her heart.
She hasn't been that excited since they left the Abbey.
She hasn't gotten to like play with pus and set bones and make people cry. She hasn't gotten to do any of that fun, really gross stuff. And there was a lot of pus in this episode. But yeah, her face, Murta just like not having it. Like, this is terrible. Murta's completely grumpy. He's really pissed. Wait in the car. And what the frick is he supposed to do? He doesn't have a book with him. Is
No,
he supposed
right?
to talk to people he doesn't like? What is he supposed to do? Like, give him a tablet or something.
I know, she's just like, you don't even have to go in. And I'm thinking like, but what if he wants to? There's nothing to do up there.
The fuck is he supposed to do? Poor
You're
guy.
right. It's just like wait in the car, like
For hours.
we were 80s kids. We were left in the car. So, I mean, what did we do when our parents locked us in the hot car while they went into the store for like an hour?
I climbed into the front seat and I played with the steering wheel and pretended to drive. If I was really
Yep, me
lucky,
too.
they le if I was really lucky, they left the keys in the ignition, because I was also a kid in Florida. So they had to usually leave me with the air going because it was 8 million degrees and my little brain would have melted within 30 seconds. So usually I had like the radio, but if like my grandma left me in her
Yeah.
Oldsmobile, which incidentally I thought was called an Oldsmobile, not because of the manufacturer, but because it was that old. Was a random thought. I've not thought that thought in 30 years. That's hilarious.
Oh my God. Although I love those little like things about like when you're a kid that you just like I remember we were at a store and we were shopping for a speedometer for my parents' bikes. And I was like, oh, I found it, a speedometer.
That's how I learned how to spell it, and I still say thermometer when I'm trying to write
Wednesday. Come on,
it.
everybody says that.
Everybody
Everybody, come on. Wednesday.
I played with the steering wheel. What's he
Yeah.
supposed to do? But that was like when they went to go pay for gas or something, or would like run into Kmart, and I didn't want to go, and they didn't want to take me.
So you're saying I was more neglected than you.
I mean, it's not a contest, but
Oh man. Well, and I lived, in New York, so it wasn't as hot. And so, windows for the any kids listening, windows used to actually roll down. It wasn't like
yeah.
you didn't need the, so my parents would be like, lock the doors and crack a window.
Yes, that happened in the winter. For me, it didn't really happen in the summer. In the summer, it was like, no, the AC's got to stay on, or absolutely not. You can't stay in the car, even with the AC going. Or it was my job to guard the car while the car was running and the AC was on, so we didn't burn our asses off when we got back in.
Here, you're little. Guard the car.
Yes. Made perfect sense.
Anyone tries to take it, do something.
I don't know what they thought I was going to do. Beep the horn. I don't know.
Look, kids, we're all traumatized, okay?
Here we are.
You don't even know. Anyway, yeah, so... yeah,
no smartphones, no tablets. If we were lucky, we had a coloring book. He does not want Claire to go into this hospital. I don't blame him. He doesn't want to get left outside. And she says...
Jamie will be... he'll be happy if I'm happy. Because Mert is like, Jamie's not going to like this. And I'm like... but we're talking about Laird Dumbass, not Jamie.
It's the difference.
They're different people.
It is different.
But also, I mean, Jamie was a dick about it, but he has a point. Like, she yes. literally just dipped her finger in urine and tasted it within like an hour of being there. Like, what?
I'm not sure what she was looking for. I assume... Like, I'm not going to go test it out, but I assume there is a slightly different flavor to urine from diabetes.
Well, there's sugar in it. So it is like, if it's really bad, it can have like a sweet smell. I know that. So I'm guessing you can taste the sugar in the urine. I've never tried. So
not gonna.
One, I don't have someone that has diabetes so that I can ask them to sample their urine. And also, no, because that's disgusting.
Shot glass. Hey, fill me up. Okay.
It's funny, though, that they used to call it the sugar sickness because, so I have quite a history of diabetes in my family and extended family. Knock on wood, I'm good so far. And they all used to call it, they never called it diabetes. They called it the sugar. Oh,
yeah.
Uncle Lee, he can't have that. He's got the sugar.
I've heard that before. That's interesting because I heard that in the South.
Well, sometimes upstate New York is a lot like the South. Not going to lie.
Okay. Enough said.
Yeah, but they always called it the sugar, never diabetes.
I think my heart kind of broke a little for Jamie when he lost the snake.
Oh, I know.
Like, he was really upset about it. And, like, on the one hand, it seems kind of childish, but on the other, that is the only thing he's got of his brother.
Yeah.
But then he finds it again, so it's fine.
He does. I'm trying to think, though. So, when he was, and I know I'm jumping ahead, when he was at Hellwater and he made the snake for Willie, he didn't have his Sawney then, did he? Like, did he lose it at some point?
Didn't he, I think, he didn't give him a snake in, I don't think he carved him a snake at Hellwater in the book. He just gave him his rosary.
Right, but in the show he carved him a snake that said Will or William or something on the back.
Actually, I think, didn't it say James? Anyway.
Anyway, we'll get there.
We'll get there and we'll talk about it forever and probably cry real tears.
Oh my God, that episode. Oh, Lord. Yeah, it's going to be bad. Okay.
Strapping. Just get ready.
But, like, I don't know if we ever find out in the show. Do we? Or do we find out in the book? What happened to Sawney?
I don't remember. I think I want to say Jenny had kept it for him. Because I don't think he took it. I don't think he took it on the road to Culloden.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll find out. Or he had it on him still. We'll find out. Or we won't. We'll, you know what? If we don't, we'll make it up. It's fine.
Or we'll all forget this conversation ever happened.
That's more likely.
Which is the most likely scenario here.
That's most likely. But we do meet Fergus in this episode.
Oh, well, baby.
Claudel, but we both decided that wasn't very manly.
Wasn't very manly. It's one of my favorite lines of the show.
It's so cute.
Oh my God.
Once again, his solution is child. adopt. You know, there's a tag. This is only a very brief tangent, I swear. There is a tag on Tumblr that's like, all the world's cats are my cats. All the world's children are my children, Jamie. That's not how that works.
But I love it when he approaches it with Fergus. It's like when a kid brings home a stray dog and the dad's like, well, we can keep it, but like, it's got to sleep in the garage. And then like 2 weeks later, it's like the dad's best friend and like sleeping like in the chair with him and stuff. Cause he's yeah. like, oh, he's going to be in the servants' quarters, whatever. And then like, you know, then all of a sudden it's like my son.
Yeah. You keep telling yourself that you don't actually want the cat. You're okay.
Yeah, I mean, dads and the animals they didn't want are like the greatest love story of our time, every time.
And they are. It's adorable. It's always funny, and you can never call them on it either.
No. Well, you can, but then they're like, oh, you stop. Don't say that about me and my baby. Right. I never said I didn't want it. Or they'll be like, I don't like this dumbass dog. As the dog's like draped across their lap and they're just like petting it and feeding it like steak.
Right. The dog suddenly eats better than the kids. Anyway. Yes. So there's some changes that they made. There's some things from the book that kind of got swept under the rug about Fergus's character in the show and don't really get addressed that much.
Yeah. So and we'll put a warning at the head of this episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Fergus was being used as a prostitute in the brothel. Like, not all the time, but like if somebody requested a young boy, Fergus was up. So they definitely like brush that completely under the rug. And you know, I get why they did it, but like also it's, you know, it kind of is part of what shapes him as, you know, in many ways, and helps us make sense of his character a little bit, knowing that. So it's kind of strange that it's left out, and actually like a lot of his life in the brothel is just sort of glossed over in the show, where it's a little more, he talks about it a little more in the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does. And like, there's kind of a slight nod to it, I think, in season 6 when he's upset over Henri Christian having dwarfism, because because what he says is something to the effect of like remembering what it's like for children who are very different or unusual and what people like to do to them.
Yeah. And he also learned that sucking a woman's nipples helps her go into labor, which he puts to use in season 6 as well.
And, you know, and if that doesn't just tell you that children's minds are a sponge, nothing should.
Oh, God.
Poor Fergus.
One thing that I need to call out, and I'm just going to go there. This line has always bothered me. But, like, there's this whole, like, little quick cat and mouse thing between Jamie and Fergus. And Jamie's, like, not revealing his true intentions. And it actually starts to sound, like, if you're Fergus, like, it starts to sound a little rapey.
It does.
Like, he's like, I don't want that. I want you. And then Fergus is like, I'm no whore. And Jamie's like, no, not for that. I want you to be a thief. But I'm like, is that really, like, and it's supposed to be funny, right? Like, that Fergus thought this grown man wanted to be, you know, take to abuse him, and then haha, that's not what's going to happen. Like, it's supposed to be this like cute moment kind of, and it's like, Like the vibes are way off. Like that is,
Once
why is
again.
that, why is that okay that it's a joke? Like I just,
This
ugh.
shit keeps happening. Like when Jamie's beating Claire, it's supposed to be funny. Or
Right.
when Angus crosses the line and kissing Claire goodbye at the end of 116, it's supposed to be funny. These things aren't really funny. Jamie's not an idiot, even though he's playing the part of Laird Dumbass right now. He's actually not an idiot. He's fairly worldly. He knows he should be able to guess what kind of stuff a child who works at a brothel is experiencing,
Oh, he knows.
and maybe lead with, I know you're a thief and that's what I'm talking about. Like maybe lead with that. I will say turning him upside down and shaking him was really funny though.
Oh, that's
That
fun. Yeah, no, that's, but like, that's funny. And like, what? Let's stick with that.
was probably not funny to Fergus, who's just being manhandled by this gigantic Highland brute, but now it is funny. Shakes him until
Man.
crap falls out of his pockets. It was excellent. Where was all that stuff? Where was all of that stuff on his person? That's what I want to know.
I don't know.
Because
Oh, God.
he made it rain.
All the coins, and then he's like, and there's Sonny. What is, and then he's like, he calls him like a wee
Wee
something
bastard.
when,
I guess a wee
yeah,
bastard
wee
or wee
bastard
thief or
something.
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 That's also not a term of endearment, dude.
Yeah. Well, he's still in the phase of like, don't bring that thing home. I don't want to, you know, who's going
Right.
to feed it and take responsibility for it, right?
Yeah,
He's
Fergus is
needs
still
a,
the mutt.
it doesn't take Jamie long, but actually, what I always find interesting is that Show Claire is much more affectionate with Fergus than Book Claire.
Yes.
Like Book
Yeah.
Claire never really quite acts, you know, as motherly and stuff. She's always kind of like, he's Jamie's. Like, it's really weird, actually.
So I think, and maybe this is a point counterpoint for a later episode, but Claire has never really struck me as being super maternal. To be
Yeah.
honest, like she has her moments, everybody does, but she's not really struck me as being quite like that, especially not the way. Well, I don't want to, I'm just going to call him. I'm going to say that Jamie is a mother duck. So, especially not like Jamie is maternal, collecting all of these ducklings that are
Yeah.
his or not. Like she, anyway. We can talk about it another time, I guess. But yeah, it's always that always has struck me as being kind of a one-sided relationship in the books. How much Fergus really adores Claire. And she
Yeah.
loves him. I'm not trying to say that she doesn't love him and doesn't think of him as her son, but she didn't raise him. She didn't bring him home. She didn't birth him. There was all kinds of stuff that just she has been separated from. And you're right, it is really apparent in the books.
Yeah. It's she's when I picture like how she's maternal, like she's like Alec Baldwin with the broom patting Tina Fey, like they're there. They're there, which I relate to because I'm a little like that sometimes too, you know.
Yeah, so am I.
I'm like, you're old enough to clean the toilet after you puke, kid. Sorry. But you know, yeah, it's kind of weird. Yeah, I think she grows to think of Fergus more of a son after she comes back.
I think she does too. Well,
So
she has time to actually act like his mother.
yeah, but yeah, Fergus, yay. And I just love these little, he's like just the best little moments of levity, like throughout
Yeah.
this season.
And also, what I'm probably going to mispronounce his name, but Roman Baru is my best guess. The well, he's 21 now. Holy crap, he's not a kid anymore. But the young man who plays Fergus in the early seasons is just cute as a button.
Oh, I know. Oh, he's the cutest kid. I can't even.
Just cute as a button.
And he was just perfect for that role. Like, yes. I mean, perfect for it. And Cesar is as well. And I think that's how he says it. Yeah, mm-hmm. Cesar. But he's perfect for older Fergus, too. Yeah. I mean, just both roles really, really well cast. Really just make the character come to life.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we said it before, we can say it again. There is no bad casting decision in this series.
No.
There's really not. You're right. They are all excellent.
And it's funny because I spent so much time, like way more time in headspace than I want to admit, worrying about the casting of Willie. And I know that we, like older Willie, and I know we haven't actually seen him in action, but like the minute they announced that Charles Vandervaart was going to play him and I saw the picture, I was like, oh, thank God.
Oh, he's thank perfect. God. Like, I can't wait.
They did it. They did it. And I don't know why I was so worried, because you're right. They really, well, I can think of one that I would probably have made differently, but I won't go there right now. But yeah, generally, yeah, very good. Very good.
So I don't know if this is going to actually be much of a point counterpoint, but remember last season when I said every season there's a thing Claire does that just pisses me off? Here we are.
Just one?
Just, no, so many things. But like, she's so selfish this season. And it drove me absolutely freaking batty this episode. I wanted to shake her. Like, it's episode 3 in the season, and I'm still pissed at her to ransom a man's soul. Maybe I'm still pissed. I don't know. But she's so selfish. So like this argument that she has with Jamie when she comes home late from the hospital, yeah, it's shitty. Jamie's kind of shitty to her, but he has a point.
Well, I mean, he does. And if she had waited and talked to him and you know, if he had been able to talk to her about it with like, you know, at a better time, like they might have had a better outcome, but like, he does have a point. And, you know, she's like, oh, okay. Now I got to talk about a pet peeve. So Claire is always saying, like, here she said, like, I'll only treat the injured and not the diseased, unless it's something I know I can't get. But like, she is like, it's very bold of her to think that her smallpox vaccine and whatever is really going to protect her, because those vaccines also depend on herd immunity. So we all know now, hopefully, after, you know, all we've been through in the last couple of years, that no vaccine is 100% effective. What makes it effective is when enough people are vaccinated and then nobody's passing it around at all. So she's got the smallpox vaccine, but like, what does that mean when literally nobody else does? So she thinks she's just like invincible against these diseases. And I mean, she doesn't know. And these are older versions of these diseases. I mean, we know that shit mutates too. So, and then I know in the books, there's this like kind of like, and it might even be after she goes back, but there's this kind of like cockamamie, like
thing. She never got sick.
She never got sick because her immune system was just like so far evolved past what was in the past. But it's like, that doesn't really even make sense either.
It didn't.
Because it doesn't make any sense, because if she is immune from like certain more modern illnesses, but if the illness is so much more different in the past, then why would that make her immune to it? It doesn't make any fucking sense.
Blue light special.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, see there's the blue light special theory.
But anyway, so to Jamie's point, yeah, she went to volunteer at the hospital. If she had talked to him first and been like, "Hey, I kind of want to do this thing," he probably would have been supportive, even if he's a little jealous that she gets to do things she wants to do, because he be for her, because she has encouraged it, asked it, demanded it of him. He's throwing all of his morals and values out the window for this stupid scheme, and it is eating him alive. Like,
Yeah,
that's the part.
exactly.
I think that's where Laird Dumbass comes into play on this episode. So, like, in Lallybroch, it was a lot of guilt that he wasn't, like, he was just self-flagellating through the entire freaking episode over not being there to protect Jenny, not being there so that they had to, pay the watch, all that, shit that he just can't let go of because he refuses to process. Anywho. And now he's Laird Dumbass because he's doing this shit for Claire and it's killing him. It's eating him alive. He's lying to nuns now, for fuck's sake.
Right? Seriously. Well, he didn't technically lie to the nun.
It was a lie of omission and he knows what that
That it
is.
was.
Lying to nuns. Terrible Catholic. What is he doing? So, yeah. So I really side with Jamie. Like, did he word all that correctly? Did he maybe could he maybe have been less ragey about how he had this conversation with Claire? Yes.
Ridgey and pouty.
And pouty. Was he going like was he capable of it at who knows what time o'clock when he's just like been stressing and stewing and doesn't have anything else to think about other than how pissed off he is? Like, no, he probably was not. I mean, his frontal lobe is not quite developed. He's still working on it.
Yes, the traumatic brain injury.
Plus the traumatic brain injury and the actual like the emotional trauma and the other physical trauma.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot. It's a lot on his plate right now. And Claire's like, I was lancing boils. He's like, the fuck, bitch, why? Because she could be helping. Like, there are things she could be doing. And I think that's where he was trying to get at with, like, go have tea with Louise and stuff.
Right.
But she could be climbing the social ladder. She could be hanging out with Master Raymond and getting more information. Like, there are things she could be doing too. She could also be working that side of the system.
Yeah, and I mean, I think she is a little bit like she is does go and hang out with Louise a lot and stuff. But yeah, and I think they're just both being, like you said earlier, Laird and Lady Dumbass. So, neither of them, and they're not communicating at all. Like this whole first part of season two is just like could be subtitled like lack of communication gets you
Oh,
into bad stuff. Like,
yeah, it's just Stonewall City.
in deceptions, like, some of the deception is between the two of them in different ways. Like
Yeah.
she's keeping a secret from him. And I mean, he's not keeping a secret from her, but as we find out in an episode or two, he is very much bottling up his feelings about what
Yeah.
happened. And I just think they're both being dumbasses. Like, she could have read the room a little better when she got home. Like the episode before, they're not in Scotland anymore. It's different.
Nice callback.
See what I did there? It's one thing for Claire to be a healer, kind of, traveling with the Mackenzies, right? But like Jamie's really never considered, I don't think, what it means for her to be a healer outside of that like social group.
Oh, that's
So
a good
I think
point.
it probably is shocking as hell to him, especially because she's pregnant, that he doesn't know. He all he knows is that these are like the poorest of the poor people and that there's like pestilence and disease everywhere. So it's going to take him a minute to get used to that. And I think that's okay, but he could have handled himself better, but so could she. Yeah, so they're just, I think they're just both being idiots. There's your point, counterpoint.
There, so no counterpoint. I also find it very selfish of her to not tell Jamie that she knows Jack Randall is alive, because that's the only thing that is letting him sleep at night at all, is yeah. reassuring himself that his abuser is dead. And now she's got to take that away from him. And she's been hanging on to this for a long fucking time. And that shit don't smell better with age.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think it's eating her up, but she is rightfully worried about what that will do to him to know that he's alive. And she and Murta even talk about it. And I think they're both worried that he will just haul off to Scotland and just try to, or wherever BJR is right now, and try to and just kill him. And then where would everybody be at that point? Right. So, I mean, there is some selfishness in it, but I think it's also that she is worried genuinely about his reaction.
I also think, though, that she's worried about his reaction and how it's going to affect Frank, not how it's going to affect Jamie. Which,
yes,
no, I'm not even going to say it. I was going to say fair. No, it's not. It's not fair, because this is the allegiance that she chose. She chose to stay with him. And I'm not saying that means that Frank should eat shit and die, because I kind of like Frank. But at the same time, like, that's her flimsy excuse. That's going to sound real good. That's going to sound real good to the man you said you were going to stay with because you loved him and that he's your soulmate. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, and we'll see that play out in one of the future episodes that's coming up very soon. Again, I never know what happens in which episode, so I'm not sure which
we'll
one.
We'll be surprised. We'll find out together. So the thing that I wanted to bring up for John, because this kind of sort of relates to the shitty argument that Laird and Lady Dumbass had about her being at the hospital and volunteering. When John and Claire got married, he gifted her a medicine kit, a medicine box, fully stocked, just automatically assumed, like, this is who you are. This is what makes you happy. I think this is the best thing that I can do to help you heal, is to give you something to be useful. Unfortunately, she stares at it and thinks about all the ways she can kill herself with what's inside. But he tried. Like, he did the right thing there.
Now, on the show, Jamie also gets her a medicine box. It's the Dr. Rawlings medicine box. I can't remember in the book if he gets it for her or if it's, she just buys it. But, yeah. So it's kind of nice, too, like, because he, in, like, when she, in later season 3 and in early season 4, after she comes back, like, Jamie has definitely become more accepting of just, like, okay, this is who Claire is and there's nothing I can do about it. So I might as well help her out, right? And then by the time she gets to John, I mean, John's just, he knows what's up, and he has learned from his going through his life that he is not going to stand in the way of a strong-headed woman like Claire, like his mother, like his sister-in-law, like, no. So he's learned, you know, from observation. And it is such a sweet gesture. I love that scene, because it's like Willie calling her, like, Mother Claire, and John with, that melts my fucking heart every time. We better get Mother Claire in season 7. Anyway,
right, since we're on this, I'm gonna ramble just a tiny bit. I love in, not Echo, the one after it, book 8, I can never keep the title straight, anywho,
Written in My Own Heart's Blood,
thank you, that book 8, when Willie realizes that Jamie is his father and he's having his angsty meltdown, I do like how he's going through all of the people who lied to him and how he's got to come up with, like, new ways to fit everyone into his life, in his mind, and all of this stuff. And then he gets to Mother Claire and, well, no, I guess that's still the same.
Well, and talk about it right at the end of Echo. I think he even says that to her. I can't, Maybe it isn't. Maybe it is when they see each other and again in, I can't remember, but they talk about it and he says like starts he starts calling her Mrs. Fraser or something again, and she's like, can't you? I don't even remember, but I'd have to go look it up. But yeah, to
Yeah,
talk
look it
about
up.
it. They talk about it.
Yeah.
And it's very
Love
sweet
it.
because, and she, you know, we were just talking about her maternal instincts with Willie, even though he's like grown up by the time she comes into his life, we get to see her being a little maternal with him when he gets like hurt and stuff, and it's very sweet. She has a very soft spot for him, which is just
She does.
adorable.
It's interesting that her, or we see her as being so maternal when she's got grown children.
Yeah, we never get to see really. There's a few scenes in the books. There's a little bit in the books more with her when Brianna was little, but not a lot. And it's all like told through older Claire's perspective. You know what I mean? It's not like they show it in real time.
So something else that doesn't make sense about this episode, why in the hell are they openly talking about their plot in front of Jared's servants?
Well, it's funny
Why?
because in the earlier episode before, they said they made sure to mention that Jared had chosen his servants well and they were like of the utmost discretion or whatever. That would no.
I
Nope.
feel like
I'm
they.
sorry.
Okay, so what that sounds to me like is the servants, it's okay if the servants know that Jared's a Jacobite because they know and they're well compensated and they're not gonna like sell information. Is that going to
Right.
translate in their favor when he comes home? Like, why are they talking about this plot in front of the servants? The whole time, I was just like, why are they doing this? Shut up.
Well, and it's kind of gross if you think about it because, like, it just kind of shows how they, like, don't even consider the presence of the servants. It's like,
Yeah, really weird.
and it's different. I'm not comparing the two at all, but like it makes me think of like stuff from like the antebellum South and like during slavery and stuff
Yeah.
when they just would talk pretty openly about stuff in front of the slaves because they didn't even really view them as human. Obviously,
Yeah.
this is not the same thing, but you know, it's like wow.
The help is invisible.
Oh, yeah, it's annoying. That's why I like Downton Abbey, because they are not invisible. Anyway, I digress. Yeah, so that didn't make sense. 100%. And also, so I think this is because I just watched Versailles, so the show Versailles. So I was like, you know, I know that Versailles isn't like super far from Paris, but it's definitely like not just like a hop, skip, and a jump away. So I looked it up today and I'm like, it's like 13 miles. And I can't remember the kilometers for our non-American listeners. I'm sorry. From Paris to Versailles. And then I'm like, so how long would that be by carriage? And it's really hard to find this information. Like, I've had to look up shit like this for other stories I've done, and it's like really hard. Like, you'd think like somebody just needs to build like a calculator, right? Like just a simple calculator for people who like write and stuff so they know this shit.
That's
But
a
anyway,
good idea.
right?
Okay,
Like just
now I
like
want to do it.
13 miles equals, you know, how many hours by horse-drawn carriage, by wagon, whatever. But anyway.
I can do that next cell. Shit.
Oh, nice. But anyway, I calculated that it would take approximately 3 to 6 hours. And three is like, I'm guessing that wouldn't be the norm because when you think about how shitty the roads were. So, yeah, so we're talking like significant trips, and he's making these like 2 times a day. Like, what?
3 hours. to go 13 miles is booking it in a carriage.
Yeah, yeah. That's, like, the high end. Because it said, like, they can go, like, 2 to 4 miles per hour or something like that. So, yeah, I was just like, this doesn't, like, there's no way he'd be traveling back and forth to Versailles, like, in the same day and doing, mm-hmm. like, other stuff, too. Like, it just does not make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
I'm like, come on, people. Well, but that just makes me think of bees. And how William was, like, up and down the entire East Coast, like, 5 times in that book.
That kid, that poor kid has gotten lost so many times. It's like every time we see him, he's like, he's lost again. Holy shit. He walks a lot. He rides a lot of horses.
Did he go all the way up to New York at one point? I think uh-huh. so. And then, because did he go with Ian? I can't remember. But anyway, he went up to New York. He came back. And then they're like, oh, got to go to Philadelphia. And he's like, okay. And I'm
after getting lost in the dismal, he, in Bees, though, it was like he went to Lynchburg, met up with John Cinnamon, and then, like, they rode to Savannah, where Lord right. John was. That's not like a day trip. Even today, that's not a day trip.
No. I mean, and again, for our I know sometimes, especially people that live in, like, Europe and stuff, it's just kind of a weird concept to think about, like, the distance
far, yeah.
in the U.S. and how far things are. But yeah, these are not, like, yeah, like, that's not even a day trip by car. So, like...
I'm looking up to yeah. see how far it is from Lynchburg to Savannah. It is 435 miles. Come on, calculator. And if they were on horseback, 435 miles, they could probably travel 30 miles a day because they're experienced riders. That's 2 weeks.
Right, right.
Or more. Each way.
It's just a hop, skip, and a jump, you know. He gets it from John.
Do they have calluses on their ass? That just seems like a long time to be sitting in a saddle. Like, that makes my thighs hurt just thinking about it.
He grew up with his papa, like, you know, stopping in North Carolina on the way to Virginia. On the way. So, John, I was just in the neighborhood gray. Hop over to Virginia from London to the Lake District. Oh, God. These grays, they stress me out. And yes, I am calling William a gray because
he is.
He is a gray as much as he's a Fraser.
So what do you think should be our non-canon ship of the week?
I'm going to go with Claire Louise. I think I've talked about this before, but like, I always like to think of Louise as a, like, nice alternative to Claire Gayless. And I won't go into all that again. But, I get a vibe. Like, I got a little bit of a vibe last episode, you know, when Claire was watching her get her muffin sheared or
whatever. Her beaver depelted.
Her muffin sheared. That makes no fucking sense. You know, and she was kind of like, at first she was like cringing, and then she was like, like, okay,
you know, try that.
So I think Louise would, they would really, they could tear shit up a little.
Louise is growing on me on the rewatch. I found her so annoying the first time through. Like, she just, I didn't care for her at all. I just found her annoying. Not like evil like Gayless, but annoying.
Yeah, she is annoying, and I mean, she really bullies poor Mary. Like,
she does.
Give the kid a break. She's 15. But anyway, yeah. So, yeah, I like Louise. I mean, Claire says she's a good friend, and she does prove to be a good friend later on. And it's not till a few episodes where you really start to see what Claire sees in her as a friend. Which in the book, it's a little more I think their friendship is a little more well formed in the beginning.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like Louise. She's annoying, but you know, she's like that annoying friend that's like kind of annoying, but really sweet and like has all these connections. So it's just like you just kind of put up with the annoying part.
Yes. Yeah, that sums it up.
So, did you have a fic that you put on the Dead on Arrival list this week?
I did. And this is, it's silly. So I was scrolling through, I don't TikTok, but I YouTube Shorts, which is just the same thing. And there is a guy who posts these like cooking videos. And I'm not going to say who it is because this is directly related to the DOA fic. But he made this, he's like Italian and he does it. He's rather attractive, kind of buff, does everything shirtless, which is the whole reason I watch it. Not going to lie. Because he's really obnoxious, very young. Anyway, he made a dish with penis-shaped pasta and white sauce. And I shared this video with a couple of friends, and I was like, hey, in case you need like lunch ideas, here's an idea for you. And these are fandom friends, and one of them says, oh, like John's Kitchen. I'm like, oh shit, here we go. Cause now I'm having thoughts that this is like some awful, like modern AU midlife crisis grinder hookup. And it's just going so badly.
Oh God.
That was it. I'm not going to write that one, but
That makes me think of one that I never wrote. It's not a new one that I never wrote, but I used to envision doing like a birdcage kind of modern AU with like John and Jamie and Willie and Tom Bird is Spart, what's the boy, what's the servant's name? Atticus Spartacus or something. Something like that. And like you just made me think of that because of the penis-shaped pasta. Because in the movie they have the like
Bowls.
she's like, oh, are these men playing leapfrog on
Leapfrog.
the
I adore that movie so much.
Oh my God, I love it. I love it. That would be like perfect, right? Like, but I never wrote it. So if anyone wants likes that movie and wants to write that, go right ahead. You have my stamp of approval.
Birdcage fusion fic. That would be thin. Oh my God. That would be fantastic.
Agador is the name.
Yes.
Agador, not Atticus. Agador, but I'm pretty sure they call him Agador Spartacus, right?
Again, he
So.
insists on being called by his full name. I do not wear shoes. They make me fall down. Okay.
Oh God, I love it. And then you would get to have like Jamie and John as like older, mature men, like just kind of living their best life. Oh God.
Yeah, that would be perfect. That would be so perfect. I need to watch that movie again.
Oh God.
So, Fic Rec this week. This week, we are recommending A Token of Appreciation by Levy Squeaks. This is kind of a thank you since he couldn't join us today. This is a special story to me because it was one that he wrote for my birthday. And it's just a short little Fergus-centric story where he gives Jamie a pocket watch for his birthday.
Oh,
It's very cute.
that sounds. I think I may have read that now that you mentioned that.
That's
Very
cute.
cute.
It's short and sweet. So we will link that on social media. Please go give it some love. It's definitely worth it.
So we don't have any mail yet, but we did have another Tumblr comment that we want to talk about a little bit. And it kind of is a good timing, I think, because we were just talking about Fergus's history and all of that too. But One of the Tumblr commenters said, you know, pointed out, oh my God, my dogs are snoring. I don't know if that's picking that up.
I can't anyway. Hear them.
I'm like, what is that sound? It's snoring. Okay. That John is also a sexual assault survivor. And people who watch the show only or haven't even read the Lord John books probably wouldn't know that. But it says, in fact, DG pays a nod to this in John's sexual encounters, particularly when he faces the chimney piece when having sex with Percy, which is in Brotherhood of the Blade. I must say the fandom brushes past this quite a lot. And I would say that I think unless you've read, a lot of the fandom hasn't read the Lord John books. So if you haven't read the Lord John books, you wouldn't know this about him.
Yeah. It's not, he doesn't, like, even in his internal monologue, he doesn't talk about it enough, or much, not enough. He doesn't talk about it very much, doesn't think about it very much. It comes up a few times. There is, like, he's with the Hanoverian troops in, was that Brotherhood 2? And he he sees one of the Hanoverian privates as being made fun of, bullied, teased, whatever, for being gay. But it's like a joke. But he can see, John can see by looking at this young soldier that it's hitting home, that it's true. So John kind of jumps in and is like, you have to laugh or they're going to know.
Right, yeah.
And then that's where the reveal is for the reader, that he knows what happens when cruel people, even your brothers in arms, find out that you're gay. This commenter is correct. We do kind of tend to brush past this a lot. We don't really, it doesn't come up very much. I've seen it a few times, not a whole heck of a lot. It's just one of those like difficult things to approach.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would like, however, to point out that it's really not specifically stated in the books that John prefers to top because of his sexual assault survival experience, because he's been sexually assaulted. And that would also be kind of a shitty assumption to make. Like, that may be the case. It could be a trust thing.
He does say that, though, in Brotherhood of the Blade. And I'm not saying it's right, but I'm just saying, like,
yeah.
In Brotherhood of the Blade, he does, like, Percy wants to top John, and John kind of gets lost in his thoughts a little bit about why he doesn't normally like to, and it's because of that. But you're right that, like, that's... And that's just pure Diana, just like, again, just not understanding male sexual assault or sexual assault in general. Mm-hmm. So she's just like making these kind of wild assumptions about gay men and their experiences with that. And just assuming that, like, if a guy had been raped, he would not like to be topped. And that's just so fucking stupid. Cause again, you know, when you talk about this stuff, like, you know, does that mean a woman never likes to, you know, be penetrated again if she's been raped? Like, that's just, it's so fucking dumb.
Yeah. And sometimes though, sometimes that does occur. That is, that's a normal course of the trauma and the healing, normal response. It's not the only response. It's not necessarily one that people who experience it are going to be necessarily comfortable with that response. Like, everyone is different. Everyone's journey is completely different. And there's no right or wrong way to live through this.
People will have all different reactions to it. But the fact that she chose this one and then brought it up in this context.
Yeah.
And knowing everything else I know about her makes me think that this is just what she thinks. Like,
yeah,
you know, and you know, some guys just prefer to bottom. Some guys just prefer to top. It's okay. Mm-hmm. And sexual assault doesn't have to have anything to do with it. Just, you know, wow, what a concept. That people's sexual lives can be shaped by something other than sexual assault.
It could just be your preference. It's okay.
I read once in some article about how there's definitely like amongst some men in the gay community where it kind of becomes this like hierarchy weird thing, like, and then like bottoms are like seen as like the more effeminate and like whatever, and it just becomes this weird like way for, you know, that people separate themselves out too. And I'm just like,
yeah, the stereotypes. Well, that's why, right. That's why top bottom discourse in fandom is just not helpful.
Yeah, I just it's just weird to me, and I never thought about that, because obviously I shouldn't say obviously, but I am not a gay man, so, or a man who likes to have sex with other men in general. So, and I'm not in that community. So I've just, the thought never occurred to me that there would be that like kind of weird stereotyping and hierarchy that can be pretty damaging.
Yeah. Bringing it back to John and Percy, though, he was very surprised that he liked it and it scared him.
Yeah.
I need to reread that book again so we can unpack that.
Doesn't he also let Stefan tap him?
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
Which I think anybody would be a little nervous about.
Sure does.
So, you know, it just takes trust for him is basically what it boils down to. And again, that doesn't have to be anything about being a sexual assault survivor. Like,
really doesn't. See, now I'm thinking about Stefan, and that's where my brain's going to be for the rest of the evening.
I mean, I think that John, of all the men, you know, because their friendship has been gone on for so long, and it's very much like Jamie, like John really very much trusts Stefan, and, you know, so there you go.
I would love to spend time really talking about him more, but
yeah.
I think we have probably beat this episode like a drum.
This is going to be like one of the most boring episodes of the podcast, I think. Or just it like
didn't feel fun.
What do we talk about?
This episode.
I'm sorry, everyone. We tried.
Okay, so here we go. It is entirely possible. So Interview with the Vampire just came out, and I watched it the other day. Have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't watched it yet. I have to do that. It's on AMC, right?
Yep. 1 million out of 10. No notes. I'm in gay vampire heaven. It is fucking amazing. And like nothing is ever going to be as good as the show. I had to pause this thing like 4 times to lose my shit and then settle back down. It is freaking phenomenal. And then like to go from that, where every shot is just the writing, the writing on that show, Beth, I could never, but I want to. It's so good. The dialogue is just perfect. The scenery is beautiful, and every single shot is just filled with tension and emotion and excitement and like anticipation and seduction. And then I'm watching fucking this episode of Outlander, which is nothing. And I'm
Lady Dumbass.
It is Laird and Lady Dumbass, and I'm so disappointed.
I can't remember if you and I talked about the show True Blood before.
No, we haven't talked about True Blood. I used to watch True Blood.
Okay. So I was watching my show 911 Lone Star, and now I'm making my husband watch it with me, because that's what I do. I force him to watch my favorite shows with me against his will. So there's this character on there, and he always looked really familiar to me, but like I just didn't really think to look him up or whatever. And my husband's like, he looks so familiar. And I'm like, you know, you're right. I got to look him up. So I look him up. He was Hoyt Fortenberry.
I've seen him in like gifs and stuff on Tumblr that he's in that. And I'm like, you're going to say Hoyt.
Yes. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited because I loved that show. Oh my God. This is now a vampire show.
My fucking Tumblr, if you follow me, I'm sorry. My Tumblr is 100% just Interview with the Vampire spoilers right now.
And well, mine is just 911 Lone Star, so I mean it's no better.
My cue. I was going through the gifs and everything when I saw that the episode dropped online early. I'm like, well, I guess I'm getting an AMC subscription tonight, and I did. And it's just me and a bottle of wine, and oh, it was so good. So that's nice. That's now my, I've made that my whole personality, and I'm not going to apologize. You're welcome. The gifs are tasty.
I'm gonna watch that tonight. Now I think after we stop recording,
feel free to scream at me on Discord.
Okay, I will.
All right. I think we should probably wrap up Lord John Lander because we're still technically here. Thank you everyone for listening. It's always a pleasure, even when we're talking about boring shit. I hope you found something that entertained you or at least kept you occupied while you did something terrible like scrubbing toilets or washing dishes or something.
This is definitely a scrubbing toilets episode.
For sure. All right.
Thanks everyone.
We will talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.
If you're listening to this, it means you survived another episode of Lord John Lander. We'd love to hear from you on Twitter or Tumblr at Lord John Lander or on our website at lordjohnlander.wordpress.com/contact us.
All opinions expressed on the Lord John Lander podcast belong to us and are not affiliated with Outlander, Sony, Stars, and definitely 100% not with Diana Gabaldon.
This podcast is not suitable for children, immature adults, homophobes, anyone who takes fandom seriously, people who don't understand that the characters aren't real, people with sticks up their ass, people who hate fun, and people with no sense of humor. Do not try any of these hot takes at home. We are professionals.
And if you know us in real life, no, you don't.